From KCRW, this is Here Be Monsters.
Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Tarik, I just got here. I'm down here at the front door.
Sounds perfect. Okay, let me come and get you. Just a sec, please.
Okay, for sure. I'll see you soon.
I went to Tarik's apartment for dinner. Catherine was already cooking when I got there. She added spices to a hot pan, and they aerosolized into the small apartment, making us all cough. But we left the fan off so that I could record the sound of the sizzling spices. Catherine added rice and chicken and left it to simmer with a lid on. One of the dogs liked me, and the other one didn't. With this in mind, I sat my apple pie down on the kitchen table, just out of reach of the dog who liked me. I brought apple pie because I didn't think that Tarik had ever had one before. And I also didn't think that there was anything better I could have brought for someone who loves America and Americans as much as he does. Our first interview was a couple weeks earlier, and after we finished, we stood on the street outside the recording studio, and Tarik reminded me that he was leaving town, moving to Medford, Oregon, to be closer to Catherine's parents before their wedding. He told me that I needed to come eat Pakistani biryani with him before the two of them left Seattle. And thus, 1 month later, the spices in the air, the small apartment, the apple pie, and the two dogs. And so the city of Panjgur itself is small, right?
It's very small.
So what's in the middle of it?
Mostly, you know, you can see houses, mud houses. And we provide, you know, the best dates in Pakistan.
What makes them the best dates?
Because there's a kind of date which is called Muzafati. And this is extremely, you know, popular. So that's makes it very good. It's extremely sweet and it's really delicious. It's really delicious.
And did your family farm them?
Oh, yes. My family has, you know, a property of dates. And my father is still taking care of those, you know, date trees.
Could you just introduce yourself?
My name is Muhammad Tarik and I'm from a very backward area, which is called Panjgur, bordering Iran. So I belong to the Balochistan province, which is the largest state in Pakistan. People in other parts of Pakistan, they would say Baloch, illiterate people, uneducated people, this is what they think.
And that's not accurate.
That's totally false. Like the Balochs have been nomads. This is what, you know, my ancestor told me, that we Balochs have been nomads and we have been, we never had like a country. We just used to settle from places to places.
What happened on December 31st of 2005?
I would say best day of my life. I was asleep with the same room, me and my uncle, my best uncle. I used to be my best friend. So when he woke up, he made me wake up just to see outside. When he told me, hey, Tarik, wake up. You're missing the sight. I said, what's going on? He told me, wake up and just see outside. When I just went outside, oh my gosh, all the area is white. It's all each and every house and each and everything is, you know, there's snow everywhere. And this was the first time I've seen snow in my life. It was like 3 or 4 inches. And this was so cool. Like, it was so cool. It's cold outside, but I really loved it. And we went outside and just to see the area, and it was so pretty. I saw snow everywhere. Like on the dead trees, on the buildings, and you know, but it was so cool that I really loved it.
When was the last time it had snowed in your hometown?
People were saying, you know, it has been like 32 years it snowed.
Wait, are there pictures of you on that day?
No, Like, I did not have a camera at that time, so I could not take any pictures.
That's too bad.
Well, yeah. It's life, but I'm having lots of snow here now.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that too.
Here Be Monsters, the podcast about
99.99%, I'm sure.
The podcast about
the unknown. No. A lot of the Belush people have disappeared.
Exactly.
How many?
21,000 people are still missing. Lawyers, students, teachers, political activists, human rights activists.
Why?
The thing is this, if you just say, like, suppose you're my friend and you disappear one day, and I go to the press club and I take your photograph and say, this guy is my friend, he used to be a political activist, it makes me a political activist. And tomorrow they would come and kidnap me as well.
Who would take you?
The Pakistan military intelligence. They come in a van or a truck, like when you're sleeping in at night, like 3 a.m. or 4 a.m., they just raid your house and come and just, you know, take you from your family. If anyone resists from your family, they just, you know, they don't care. They just, you know, and they just disappear you.
How many people do you think you know that have been disappeared?
For my friends, I had like a 15 or 16 friends, which I know, and they were killed.
So have you ever seen it happen? Have you ever seen someone being taken away?
Oh, yeah. Like when I was in university, there was a guy, Bahram, his name was Bahram. He was a political activist. And what I saw, they were dragging that guy, you know, from the collar. And he was yelling for help, but nobody can help, you know. Nobody can do anything. And they just put them in the truck and put him away.
Did you ever see him again?
Nope. This was the last time.
You taught English.
Mm-hmm.
Did you teach English in the same school that you learned it in?
No. I was posted to a very remote school. There was a small population scattered in mountains, and the area was called Kobun. I was the only teacher for that school. English was the only subject I could teach well. And I was really focusing on English and some of the social studies and, you know.
How many students did you have?
Like 40. At first, they were all boys. The girls were not in school. When I tried to bring them in school, faced a lot of resistance. I asked the parents just to send their daughters to school. And like they started, you know, bringing, you know, their daughters to the school. So that was the first time. But after that, like, I faced a huge, you know, criticism from the madrasas. So the madrasas never want, you know, girls, you know, to go to schools or just to get education. They just want them to stay at home. I was a threat for them. I'm a pretty much liberal person, and I don't think that I think it's totally unfair if you don't send your, you know, girls to schools. You must send your girls to be educated. They should be equal with the boys.
So what happened?
I went to the Friday sermon, and the guy, was delivering the Friday sermon. He really criticized me, and he even took my name. You, whatever you're doing, this is totally unacceptable because this is not a Muslim act, and this is against of our values, this is against of our religion, and we don't want our daughters to be westernized, you know, stop doing that. Otherwise, we will throw you out from this school and from this area.
After 4 years of teaching at that school in the countryside, the education authorities asked him to leave. Tariq thinks that it was that imam who took his name, that he was the one who reported him to the Pakistani officials. But whoever it was, it worked, because Tariq had to leave that school and go back to his hometown of Panjgur. There, he got another job teaching English, again in a school with both boys and girls. But soon after Tariq arrived, pamphlets started showing up on the school's front door. He ignored them. Everyone else did too. But soon after that, on another day, during recess, he heard the sound of 6 motorbikes approaching on the road outside. They parked in front of the school. So you were standing in the office at your school,
mm-hmm.
and you what kind of day was it? Like what was going on at the school that day?
At that time, it was the recess time, it was nearly 12 o'clock. Yeah, so it was recess time, and what we heard, when we were in the staff room, in recess time, all the staff room, we were just sitting having tea break. So when they we just heard the noise of the motorbikes. So when 6 of them, they just came into the office. There were masks over their faces, and they had AK-47. Each and everyone had AK-47. They looked kind of scared. They just showed up and they were pointing guns at us, and they broke our, computers and school files. And the maintenance guy, he tried to stop them. He was just confronting them, and they just, bit the guy a lot, the maintenance guy, with the barrels of the guns. And even one of them is told me that he knows me, because I've been teaching these kind of westernized education to the people in that remote area. They just say, we have been distributing pamphlets. Don't you see that? This is the final warning. If you guys open your schools and teaching, girls, you all will be killed. So this is going to be the final warning.
So they had given you pamphlets before?
Yes.
What did they say?
The pamphlets were saying, we all are the sons of Prophet Muhammad. We are all Muslims, and we are all Baloches. We have our values not to send our, sisters to learn Western-style education and to learn English and this and that. You need to stop this. Yeah, that's what, they've said in the pamphlets. But we didn't take them seriously. I said, maybe there's some, pranksters,
And so they're standing there in the office with you guys?
Yes.
What are you thinking?
I was very scared at that time. I was so scared. I just thought maybe they just kill me, or they're just gonna take me with them.
How long do you think those 6 guys stayed in the office for?
They're still 15 minutes.
Why do you think they left?
They left because they said that if we're gonna just, send this message, they're gonna stop. And this was just a coward act, just an attempt.
And so they eventually
left. They left.
Got back on the motorbikes.
Yes. Nobody know where they go, how they came in. They were carrying, AK-47. They were masked. And where did they go?
Why do you think they didn't take you or kill you?
Personally, I still wonder why. When they were threatening me, I thought at that time, maybe they're going to take me, or they may kill me. That's why I was always in search of an opportunity to go out of Pakistan. But then I got this opportunity to come to the U.S.
Why did you want to come to the U.S.?
I've heard so many things about the U.S., a free country, land of opportunities, freedom of speech, whatever, like so many things. Like, it was like a dream of mine just to go to the U.S. You know, I was always eager to come and to meet the Americans and see their life. So this was like a golden opportunity for me.
Tariq's golden opportunity came in the form of a J-1 visa from the State Department. The J-1 is a cultural exchange program for scholars and workers from other countries. They come to the U.S., they learn the culture, they share theirs, and then they return home. But Tariq had a plan. If he could get a J-1, he'd come to America and then file for asylum, get a court date, and plead his case, explain why Pakistan is too dangerous a home for him to return to. So he filed for the J-1 and waited. His call came one day when he was at the market in Panjgur. He was buying groceries when his phone rang. It was the embassy.
So a guy from Islamabad called me and he told me, he asked me, hey, do you want to go? I said, yes, definitely I want to go. So he told me, can you leave now for Karachi? Because Karachi is the city where all the international flights are there. He just told me, can you leave now? I said, right now? He told me, yeah. I said, oh, okay, I have to take a bus from my hometown to Karachi, which is like 14 hours on bus. And I told him, okay, because this was the opportunity which I was, you know, looking for in my lifetime. And I went back home. I took just only a one backpack and put some, just a few clothes, and I said, bye. I even didn't meet my father that day. And I just met my mother and my sisters and my brother, and I said goodbye. I could not take the courage to tell my mother that I'm leaving forever, because you can never tell your mom that this is going to be the last time. So I could not say that, and I just hugged her and I kissed her. I said, I'm going for my studies and hopefully I'll see you one day. And she was crying at that time. And I took the bus and I came to Karachi, and the next day my flight was to Washington, D.C.
Did you know that was the last time you were going to see your family?
Yes, definitely. Because if I stayed there, I would be killed, I would be disappeared, and I would be tortured, and nobody knows where my body is and where my, you know, where I am. My family would be at the press club. So this was the time I knew it.
What were you thinking about on your flight to Washington, D.C.?
I was very much excited about, you know, the life in the U.S. and going to the U.S. and see the people. What I've heard, said I'm going to be in a free country. So from that day when I walked in the land of the U.S., I didn't walk in the U.S. as a Pakistani. I didn't look back. I just walked in as a future American, honestly speaking.
Like you knew?
I knew it, that I'm going to go and apply for asylum, then I'm not going to go back to Pakistan.
Do you believe in predestiny or fate?
See, I'm a believer of destiny. But on the other hand, like, I'm in the middle, honestly. I would say people make their own fate.
But you said that, like, when you landed here, you knew that you were going to become a citizen.
Yeah. I knew it, that the doors are going to open for me. And I'm very much sure that I'll be a citizen in one day. I'm 99% I'm sure. Because I came here in the States legally, I got the visa, and I came here, and I have the each and every right to be given asylum. And I'm sure, you know, my case will not be, you know, denied. So for me, like, you know, destiny and fate, these are just the people just say it, but we have to make our own fate. And that's what I believe.
Like, what kind of God do you believe in?
God?
Yeah.
Well, I believe in God. I would say, I'm not a religious person, but I would say that there is a creator which created, you know, us. That's what I believe. And, you know, raised as a Muslim, I've never been religious, but I believe there exists a God. The God has put us in a test. Like, I would say this life is just like an examination where you are given three hours to attempt a paper, and whatever you write at the end, the examiner will check the paper and whether you failed it or passed it.
And how do you pass it?
Doing good deeds, you know.
Here, who's this here?
That one is Slugger.
Slugger.
What is that? You wanna say something?
Slugger.
You wanna say something?
I'm gonna have to wash this microphone. Like, and then who we got over here?
The little one is Tilly.
I'm curious to know a little bit more about how you two became a couple.
So we met online through a dating app. And to be entirely honest, when I first saw his picture and, you know, the brief description that he put of himself, it didn't even occur to me that he was from Pakistan or that mm-hmm. he was Muslim. And I remember hanging out with him that first night and I remember the exact moment when he labeled himself as being Muslim and how dumbfounded I was that it never occurred to me. And it was really interesting because I personally had never met a Muslim before. And to be entirely honest, I was very fearful and had a lot of anger towards Muslims just because of what we're fed from the media about, you know, radical Islamic terrorism, and that gave me this preconceived notion that Muslim men are mean mm. and angry and oppressive, violent yeah. and oppressive. And so for me to be on this date with a guy I've never met before, having a wonderful time, and then, you know, just casually slipping it into the conversation, by the way, I'm a Muslim, it was a real eye-opening moment for me because I had never before considered the fact that Muslims could be friendly people.
How long did it take before you told your parents about meeting Tariq?
I think we had been seeing each other for about 2 weeks or so. So I told my parents, and I was very hesitant to tell them where he was from because I knew, coming from that Christian background with a very conservative Republican mindset, that hearing that your daughter's now dating a Muslim guy from Pakistan that you met online, that doesn't really sound too good. My dad actually had said something about, you know, we're worried about you making these decisions and we're concerned about what direction your life is going in and, you know, just please think about what you're doing. And although he never directly said that he was worried about me dating Tariq, it was understood in the undertone that that was one of his big concerns. Having such a good relationship with my parents, that really hurt me.
Oh yeah, they freaked out at first because she told them that she is dating a Muslim guy. And I would say people are Islamophobic, you know, in countryside. I know that they have, you know, they just watch the conservative media and it's what they believe, what the media says. They would say I would be a very strict person with long beard and, you know, like people, majority of the Americans, they would say Muslims have four wives, so, which is not true. Like 90.99 people in my hometown have single wife, just one wife, not four. So these are the common misunderstandings which I think each and every American has.
Do you think that your family's opinion of Tariq has changed
Yes, dramatically. My parents actually came for a out-of-the-blue visit. They had never come up to Seattle just to visit me before for no particular reason. And I introduced Tarek to them. And although it was a really brief meeting and really brief trip, they got to put a face to the name and were reassured that he, you know, is a kind heart and a good person. And it put all these fears to rest and these misconceptions about Muslim men especially gave them a newfound sense of peace about the whole situation.
You guys are moving in how many days?
We're moving to Oregon in 3 days.
And what does that future feel like right now? Like, what do both of you think is waiting for you there?
There, it's a very conservative, very Republican community. And being up here in Seattle, I definitely realize that I'm not quite as conservative as some of my family members. And so going home is a really big deal for me because I never thought that I would. And I'm very excited about it. I'm very hopeful and optimistic.
Yeah, for me, like, I just have just a few reservations. Like, I've heard, and I've been there twice, I would say that when the people see my name, a Muslim, they would judge me. Like, I have the fear of judgment. But after meeting me, I think I would bring a change. This is what I would believe.
So, I have a question for you.
Yeah, go on.
Do you ever get tired of explaining these things to Americans, having to talk about this?
No, because I never get tired. I love it. I love to discuss it, but at the same time, I feel sorry. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I feel sorry about it, you know. But I never get tired because when you think that you are doing the right thing, so definitely you're never, you know, back off. You just say, yeah, I should keep on doing it just to educate the people.
You said you think it's going to be when people see your name mm-hmm. that they judge you.
Yeah, the thing is this, like, my full name is Muhammad Tarek. Honestly speaking, that name Muhammad scares me. It makes me feel a little bit insecure that people might be judgmental about me, that I'm a Muslim. And
are you thinking about changing your name?
I'm thinking to change it. My coworker, it's hard for them just to pronounce my full name or just to pronounce Tarek. So they've given me a nickname, Mr. T, but still I'm thinking about an American name.
You said you hadn't actually looked up to see who Mr. T was until how recently?
A month ago.
Christmas, maybe.
Not after the Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
So what I found, that the appearance is really striking for me. And they say, oh, well, I'll go with the name, but I don't look like Mr. T at all.
I saw a picture of you from, I think it was Christmas of this year.
Yes.
How did you wind up in Medford for Christmas?
Like, this was my first Christmas in my life. I've never celebrated Christmas, though I've just heard about it. So my fiance was telling me this is the most, you know, celebrated holiday in the U.S. So I was, you know, very interested to celebrate Christmas, and she told me people, you know, share gifts, and this is people go to their houses. So this was the time, like, it reminded me of my childhood when I used to celebrate Eid. So I was very, you know, happy just to go and share the and just to see how Christmas is, and it was really cool. It was really a cool experience.
Her parents actually invited you.
Yes, they invited me. It was like they're trying to, you know, make me know the traditions, the things which the Americans do and which the Christians do, like Christmas, Thanksgiving, and these stuff. And I was extremely happy to learn, you know, these things. Really cool. And I also bought for gifts for them.
Did it snow at all?
Oh, yeah. So there was a mountain. It was snowing a lot, and yeah, this was my second time in snow, and I was enjoying a lot. I was sliding all the way. Yeah, it was a lot of snow. It was so much fun.
Do you think you'll ever go back to Pakistan ever?
No, not in, you know, near future.
Yeah. Does that make you sad?
Yeah, it makes me really sad because I miss my family and I miss my friends. I miss my old, you know, the people, you know, which I was, you know, living for plenty of years. And I'm marrying at the end of this year. My family would not be able to attend my marriage because I don't have any status here. I can't sponsor them. I can't bring them here. So this makes me really sad about it. This is going to be the, you know, biggest, this is going to be a big milestone of my life, and my family is missing it.
Tarek and Catherine's wedding is likely to raise eyebrows of immigration officials wary of scam green card marriages. For this reason, they've begun saving their receipts and taking photos together on every outing, collecting evidence for the government to prove that they are, in fact, actually in love. And if they can prove their love to the government, this will likely be Tarek's quicker path to permanence in America. I say that because Tarek filed his asylum papers almost 2 years ago, and he's still waiting for that call back. The government is supposed to schedule an asylum interview within 45 days, but this is something that they rarely do. As of 2017, the estimated wait times for that initial asylum interview range between 2 and 5 years. So in the meantime, Tarek and Catherine are in this state of limbo, waiting for that call, saving receipts from date nights, moving to rural Oregon, looking for teaching jobs, taking care of two old dogs, and planning for a wedding in late summer that has a menu that includes traditional Puerto Rican food and a large dish of Pakistani biryani. What's changed about you in the last 2 years?
Well, that's a great question. I think waiting is extremely, you know, hard. I'm more like alone. It's just about my future and missing family. Don't have a lot of friends. So this is what have changed my life. Missing family and friends. Because I'm like a newborn baby, which gets a new name. Where he grows up and makes friends, like a baby, newborn baby, I would say it.
Tarek and Catherine are in Oregon now, where they're currently working to set down roots with Catherine's family. They're prepping both for their wedding and for Tarek's eventual asylum interview. I met Tarek about a year ago, working at my day job, the one where Tarek became known as Mr. T. I miss working with him, and I really doubt that I'm the only one. My name is Jeff Entman, and I produced this episode with help from Bethany Denton. Our editor at KCRW is Nick White. Head over to our website to learn more about Tarek's hometown of Panjshir, the region of Balochistan, and the ongoing war that's happening there. We also have a picture of Tarek in a Santa hat, a picture of the pie I made, and a picture of Tarek on one knee proposing to Catherine. We're at hbmpodcast.com. Again, hbmpodcast.com. Music on this episode came from Lucky Dragons, Sarocell, The Black Spot, and Ahi. I'd like to extend a big thank you on this episode to the always patient, always gracious, Rob Schwartz. Just so you know, we're coming up on our season break here. Episode 80 will be our last full episode from season 5. Now, we're going to be doing some other podcast-related stuff in our off-season. And I can't give away too much of that right now. But just know that Beth and I are going to be telling you more in the credits of upcoming episodes. All right. Here Be Monsters is a part of the Independent Producer Project from KCRW. Thanks for listening. More episodes soon.